Committee. I'll officially call the Commerce Committee to order on Tuesday, February 8th, 2011. Members, if you want to take a look at your agenda, actually it's one item today. We had thought that we would be hearing a bill, but it's not quite ready for prime time, still working out a few details. So we took the broker price opinion bill off the calendar, and we will get to that very soon. That leaves us with today's agenda of the liquor overview. And I'll tell you that one of the fascinating things about this committee is that we're going to have most likely one omnibus liquor regulation bill. There may be some of the larger issues if we move forward on them. There may be separate bills. But it attracts a lot of attention. A lot of folks are very interested passionately about different things that are going on with liquor regulation and how that plays out. So I thought it would be very important, again, since we have so many new members, to understand a little bit of the background, a little of the history of liquor regulation, where we have come as a state, how we compare to other states. And this is going to be very important because as the proposals come forward, you're going to want to measure those against what you know of our current state of affairs. That's why I thought this would be really good to do before we start getting into hearing some of those bills. So with that, members, we've got some gentlemen here from the Department of Public Safety, and I'll let them individually introduce themselves and from precisely what office they hail from and what their role is in the alcohol enforcement. And give us an overview. And the way we've been running this is that if individual members have questions, they're just jumping in at any time and maybe recognizing them to address any questions they may have throughout the presentation. So with that, I think we'll go ahead and begin. And I don't know who wants to take it first, but I'll let you just go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and tell us what you'll be talking about.
Mr. Chair, Senators, my name is Jim Arnold. I am the Interim Director for the State of Minnesota Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement Division. Along with me is Special Agent John Anglin, and beside him is one of our Senior Liquor Investigators, Mike McManus.
Okay. And then go ahead, and we'll just let you, looks like you have a PowerPoint, so we'll let you just go ahead and tell us everything there is to know.
Okay. I appreciate that, Mr. Chair. Senators.
Good morning. Welcome.
We'll proceed on. On behalf of the Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement Division and the Department of Public Safety, we would like to thank you for allowing us to present the three-tier overview and also the functions that our agency does. Now, the state of Minnesota's role in the regulation of this industry is founded by the 21st Amendment, which states that the 18th Article of Amendment to the Constitution of the United States is hereby repealed. This repeal prohibition, and also the attempt by our federal government to provide oversight of the alcohol industry by basically prohibiting it. The prohibition itself, the 18th Amendment, was enacted in 1920. The 21st Amendment was ratified in December of 1933. So we're talking about approximately 77 years ago. Section 2 of the 21st Amendment is that the transportation or importation into every state, territory, or possession of the United States for delivery or use therein of intoxicating liquors in violation of the laws thereof is hereby prohibited. This section authorized the state sole oversight of the alcohol industry. Section 3, this article shall be inoperative unless it shall have been ratified as an amendment to the Constitution by conventions in the several states, as provided in the Constitution within 7 years from the date of the submission hereof to the states by the Congress. Now, this is the first time in my research that ratification was done by state convention and not by the state legislatures. So we got to the 21st Amendment before the second method of amending was used. This change is another indicator of the turbulent times our country is going through during that time period to make that difference in the amendment approval. Three-tier overview, Minnesota's model for regulation of the liquor industry. The three-tier system is set up so that alcohol is distributed to go through the system by going first through tier one, the manufacturers, which is the distillers, the vintners, and the brewers. Tier two is when the alcohol goes from the manufacturers to the wholesale distributors. And tier three is when it goes from the wholesaler distributors to the taverns, the bars, restaurants, and also the liquor stores, which I forgot in this part here. Now, this model is based on most licensees in one tier being prohibited from being licensees directly or indirectly in a different tier. Why create a model to mandate this separation of business activity? The answer to that is the societal problems that brought on the 18th Amendment, which is prohibition, that would include issues of market manipulation and the proper collection of taxes. The avoidance of market manipulations. A major concern was to prevent tied houses. Tied houses is the term used, which is when retail locations are owned by the manufacturers. Large manufacturers could push out competition by controlling the retail locations. Large manufacturers or wholesalers could pressure the retailers to increase sales by selling to someone already intoxicated or possibly minors. The other thing that they saw during that time period, well, actually, was the fact that the large retailers could possibly control distribution of popular product by owning manufacturing or getting exclusive distributing rights. So the three-tier setup was set up to end up allowing for proper collection of taxes also, besides the market manipulation. Now, within the proper collection of taxes is when excise taxes are paid at the wholesale tier, and then also the sales taxes are paid then at the retail level. There are two separate state models of the three-tier system. Those are competitive and also controlled. Now, most states have a competitive model and license the private sectors to distribute and sell alcoholic beverages within a three-tier system. Minnesota is one of those states. 18 states have adopted a controlled model of the three-tier system in which the state is involved in either the distribution tier or the retail tier or both. The three-tier regulatory approach to alcohol sales and distribution is still evident in each of the country's 50 states. Next part, we'll go into present exceptions to Minnesota's strict three-tier approach. Those exceptions would include Minnesota licensed farm wineries, which are licensed under 340A, which allow for the manufacture, the wholesale, and also to sell at retail for a $50 license fee. This is limited to under 50,000 gallons in a calendar year. The farm wineries may produce wine product from Minnesota grapes, grape juice, other fruit bases, or honey. The product may be sold at wholesale to properly licensed retailers, and on sale and off sale from the farm winery licensed premise without additional licenses. Farm wineries may also produce distilled spirits with an additional license. The distilled spirits may only be sold to a properly licensed distilled spirits wholesaler and may not be sold to a manufacturer licensed under Minnesota Chapter 340A or to a retail customer. Brew pubs. These are entities that hold an on-sale license and manufacture less than 3,500 barrels of malt liquor in a calendar year. Brew pubs may sell their brew products at on sale in the establishments owned by them or at off sale from the brewery location. Again, they only produce less than 3,500 barrels. Microbrewers, which are brewers of less than 2,000 barrels of malt liquor in a calendar year, they may sell at off sale from the brewery location up to 500 barrels of malt beverage product. The other is what's considered a small brewer, which are brewers of 2,000 to 3,500 barrels of malt liquor in a year. They may sell at off sale from the brewery location up to 500 barrels of malt beverage product.
Excuse me, Mr. Arlt.
Yes.
Can you tell us what is the, if you recall, when these laws were passed, what would be the basis for these numbers, the 2,000, the 3,500, et cetera? Was there any, were those numbers just negotiated politically? Is what my guess is. But was there any basis at all for what those levels were? Do you recall?
You know, I'm not sure exactly what the answer to that is. We'd be more than happy to research that. But I would end up assuming that part of that was to allow for a beginning brewery to build up over time and allow them the opportunity to sell, and they're small enough to still not possibly control the area that they're located in. I would be more than willing to research that.
Do you know, have there been proposals since these were established to change these numbers in any way? I know there's always proposals to have exceptions to these rules, but have there been any bills proposed or any changes made to these, the actual numbers, the 2,000, the 3,500, et cetera?
Mr. Chair,
I'm not familiar. Excuse me. I'm not familiar with any changes.
Okay.
I think initially these were done at the political level, and I think it was done, and I'm speculating a bit here, but there's always concern with mm-hmm. regard to the three-tier system. And as these things are proposed, I think at that time the legislature was concerned that they wanted to adhere to the three-tier system yet allow these small businesses a little more flexibility.
Okay. Senator Reinert has a question.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm just going to have a few clarifiers. If you'd prefer, I'm happy to hold them until the end of the presentation, or if you'd rather we ask as we go along.
Senator Reinert, if it's appropriate to the topic we're on,
okay.
I would say jump in.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the brew pub section, as I understand it, the ability to do on sale in establishments owned by the same owners is unlimited, right? It used to have a cap of one or two, but now that cap is gone. So,
as far as like an on sale liquor license in a city,
number
right.
of locations,
number of
right.
locations in one single
right.
owner could have. Yeah, there's no limits for that.
Okay, so within the brew pub industry, we essentially do have kind of the opportunity for tied houses.
Mr. Chair and Senator, that would be correct, but they also are only allowed to manufacture less than 3,500 barrels, which would limit, obviously, you know, their coverage, I guess, or the amount that the consumers could end up purchasing.
Right. Mr. Chairman, regardless of how many locations they're doing on sale in.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, and Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question I have that's kind of related to this, having to create exceptions for the tied houses and all, or tied contracts. That's what the economists refer to as vertical integration, right? When you got the wholesalers and the manufacturer all lined up. Why don't we just leave that to the antitrust laws? And why do we have this special kind of three-tier system cut out for the alcohol industry, and then we wouldn't have to have all the brew house exceptions and that kind of, why the levels of complication? I mean, doesn't the antitrust law already address the vertical integration issue, which it seems is what the three-tiered system gets at?
Mr. Chair and Senator, I'm not sure exactly as far as the antitrust laws and how they would affect it. I would think, though, since the 21st Amendment was passed in 1933, that there would have been opportunities for the three-tier system to have been properly challenged. Again, I'd be more than happy to end up researching that and finding out any challenges that have been done in courts, you know, through that particular method. But this has been an approach that has been not only in our state but in all the states since 1933. So I would assume that challenges have been made.
Senator Thompson for follow-up.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Yeah, I'm not suggesting the three-tier approach is unconstitutional. What I mean is I just wonder why the need for it, given that antitrust laws already address those kinds of things. I don't even know that you necessarily would have reason to know that. I'm just kind of curious why we essentially recodify the antitrust law, particularly applicable to liquor. But maybe there's a reason. I just don't know what it would be.
Okay. Senator Pappas, question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Alt. Oh, where is Marlene Gelsberg? She's on our agenda. What happened to her?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Senator, Marlene is retiring in just a few days.
Oh, okay.
So she could have had a party for her.
No, she elected not to take this opportunity to have a swan song moment.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
Then when we're talking about off sale from the brewery location, we're talking about growlers. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. Just wanted to clarify that. Mr. Thompson, Senator Thompson, I appreciate your comments. I think that this is a system that's been in place for 77 years, and maybe it's time to take a fresh look at it and have an analysis about, you know, is the three-tier system still relevant? I know the walls are about to shake. And, you know, given, you know, the existing economic climate. And I've been a strong supporter of brew pubs. A lot of this has been my legislation. And I think that we were really Wisconsin has tons and tons of brew pubs and small wineries, and we really needed to kind of open up the system. It really adds a lot to the environment of a downtown in particular, or any community, to have some small brew pubs that also customers can take some of the beer home in the form of growlers. So I'm very excited about your interest in this area.
Well, let the record reflect that Senator Pappas and I always agree. So
our first point of agreement.
Today.
To discuss it.
Okay. Mr. Arles, if you want to continue with your presentation.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and Senators, we'll go on to brewers, which is a category for those that brew more than 3,500 barrels. Now, brewers of less than 25,000 barrels of malt liquor in a calendar year may wholesale their own product if they apply for and receive a malt beverage wholesale license. Now, those that manufacture more than 25,000 barrels, that exemption wouldn't be available to them. Brewers may also sell malt beverage product to their own employees or to retired former employees. And also, as far as wineries, which would be a licensed manufacturer of wine which contains not more than 25% alcohol by volume, nor less than 51% of the wine is made from Minnesota-grown agricultural product. Wineries may sell at on-sale or off-sale wine made on the licensed premise without further license. Now, there is direct shipments of wine into Minnesota that is allowed, and they are allowed if the state where the winery is located affords a Minnesota winery equal shipping privilege, and the direct shipment is allowed only on the basis of a limitation of 2 cases of wine per calendar year to the Minnesota customer, and that would be as far as without a license for the winery being required for that out-of-state winery.
Mr. Arlt, are you talking primarily, this would be about someone ordering, say, either through the mail or the internet, wine from, say, California or somewhere else to be shipped in? Is that what you're talking? Is that what this is?
Mr. Chair and Senators, that's specifically what I'm talking about, whether California or Texas or wherever they can order wine from that winery. If that state where that winery is located allows for a reciprocity for our wineries, but there is a limit as far as to 2 cases per individual customer.
Do you have any estimate on how big of a market that is? I mean, it's probably pretty much on the upper end, I would imagine. Is there a lot of activity with that? Is there a lot of shipments? Or do you have any idea? Maybe you don't even track that. Maybe you don't even know.
I don't track that, but I'm aware of it.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Senator, I don't believe there is any process set up right now to end up tracking that.
Okay. I was just curious. Senator Reinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to follow on that point, that exception does not apply to beer. It's wine only, correct? So in Minnesota, if a wholesaler does not wholesale a particular beer brand to a retailer, Minnesota customers don't have access to that purchase. They can't go to the brewer and have it shipped to them, correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Now, sampling of alcohol, that might be an issue that you're looking at. Whether it would be with one of our local breweries or some other entity. Now, underneath Minnesota state statutes, we provide for a licensed on-sale and off-sale retailer to offer samples in a minimum amount of wine, distilled spirits, and malt beverage to the general public at no charge during permitted hours of operation. Minnesota statutes also provide for farm wineries to offer samples of wine being offered for sale as well as distilled spirits produced by that particular farm winery. Also, Minnesota Chapter 340A does not address the offering of samples by a brewer. The offering of samples by a brewer does not appear to be specifically allowed or disallowed under the above chapter. Now, however, stating that, Minnesota Statute 297G, which is a taxation statute, states that a malt beverage served by a brewery for on-premise consumption at no charge or distributed to brewery employees for on-premise consumption under a labor contract are exempt from tax. So the legislature appears to have looked at it at least underneath the taxation, but as far as what we can find underneath the Minnesota Chapter 340A laws, it is not really addressed one way or another whether a brewer can hand out samples.
I didn't know that employees getting beer at a brewery was part of collective bargaining. That's a new one.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senators, I'm sure there might be some state employees that wouldn't mind that provision.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Okay.
Now, to proceed on, I need to end up making a point, and that is that any proposed change to the present three-tier system would be basically our position would end up being that we are officially neutral. So now we'll move on to the section as far as the assessment of our functions. What is it exactly our agency does? The Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement Agency issuance and certification of liquor licenses and permits. We end up issuing wholesale licenses, importer supplier license, retail licenses, manufacturer's licenses, brand labels, registrations, and also farm winery licenses. Now, within that, most of the states, cities issued on-sale retail intoxicating beverage licensees are mandated by statute to include a dual approval process. The first approval is done by the local municipality. The final approval is done by the Minnesota Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement Division. For brand label registration, that also is conducted at two levels, one being the federal level, the second being at the state level. The federal level documents the chemical analysis of the product and the type of product, such as distilled, wine, or brewed. Now, the state level is used for category of license needed to distribute that product. We also use it for primary source considerations for both wine and beer. It also can be used for product tampering, which is either watering down of a product or a cheaper product being poured into the bottle and served or sold. And also possibly for counterfeiting incidents if somebody would end up manufacturing a product that would put somebody else's label on it and sell it at a higher rate than what it probably would have gotten otherwise. Now, total receipts collected for alcohol beverage licenses, permits, brand labels, and civil penalties amounted to $2,467,242 in fiscal year 2010. Underneath our enforcement efforts, we deal in the areas of underage compliance issues that would include adult providers, internet access to underage, and also direct sales to minors. We also deal with tax delinquency, which is our retailer liquor posting list, which if they're behind on paying their Minnesota taxes, they get put on that list and proper delivery cannot be made to them by the wholesalers. We also work with the 30-day credit delinquencies. We also investigate retail-to-retail sales violations, which typically will occur if somebody is on the tax delinquency list. We also deal with out-of-state retail-to-Minnesota retail sales violations. We also conduct evaluations of salvaged or damaged product that may be unfit for consumption. And this would be done like if there is a fire, a flood, or some sort of natural catastrophe, and there's liquor product there, our liquor investigators will end up reviewing it to make sure whether it's fit or not.
Mr. Arnold, could you tell, you've got a couple of bullets on there about retail to retail. So that is that a, that's where one liquor store, say, has a surplus of something and they want to sell it to a competitor or so? What exactly is that situation?
No, Mr. Chair and Senators, those situations typically end up occurring in the two above bullets, the tax delinquency list and also the 30-day credit list. Those lists, if somebody ends up, if I'm a retailer, say I own a bar, and I get behind on my taxes, or I do not pay my wholesalers, and I get put on either one of those lists, I can't get alcohol delivered to me by the wholesalers, which means to end up proceeding on in business without paying my taxes or without paying my wholesaler, I would then go out and buy retail, either in the state of Minnesota or outstate of Minnesota, bring it back, and then sell that from my retail location. Those are violations of Minnesota statutes. And they occur. Should I proceed on, sir?
Yep. Go ahead, continue.
Okay. We also can be involved with product tampering, which again is complaints of the product being watered down or cheaper product being introduced into the bar or into the bottle, actually. We conduct pre-license inspections and investigations. I'd like to point out that during fiscal year 2010, we conducted 431 pre-license investigations, which would include for retail, wholesale, or manufacturers' licensees. Those pre-license inspections gives the new owner of the business an opportunity to talk with one of our liquor investigators. They receive the same interdiction to liquor laws that each one of you should have been given. They're able to ask questions as to what they can and cannot do in the conduct of their business, what would get them in trouble for their license, what wouldn't, and it gives them an opportunity to then start up their business and get going with knowledge of what to do. We also deal with liquor liability insurance issues. We deal with also the proof of financial responsibility or dram shop insurance requirements. We conduct pre-licensed and background investigations for state-issued licenses, which is where no local approval is required, which would be in the area of like state properties. We conduct a retail alcohol vendor enforcement program. We conduct server training, and we also conduct city clerk and county auditor training because of substantial employee turnover in those areas. In the area of industry trade practices, we review advertising and look for whether it is deceptive or targeted toward underaged or whether the content itself would be indecent. We also look for any preferential treatment for a singular retailer. Again, I'd like to thank you for allowing our division to present this to you. We are open for any more questions you may have. Oh, also I want to end up saying that you should end up having in your package an initial survey that we did, and if there's any questions that's beyond it, there should be basically two pages that are spreadsheets, which looks at the three-tier system and how it's implemented and what they're doing in our neighboring states along with our own. One of the interesting things that I saw in this, and I had one of our staff people put this together, was Wisconsin probably, their three-tier system they have chosen to erode the strictness of the three levels over time. But one of the responses that they gave to us when talking about exceptions to the three-tier system was that their intent is to end up separating the manufacturer from the wholesaler and both from the retailer. So it looks like their intent, at least of their regulatory entity, is to try and move back toward a more stricter interpretation of the three-tier system. Another interesting Now, North Dakota responded that their state controlled a part of the three-tier system. It looks to me, as I reviewed this, that they actually have two different offices that will end up regulating. One is the Attorney General's office, which regulates retail sales, and the other is the Office of the State Tax Commissioner, which would regulate the manufacturing and wholesale tiers. But Iowa is one of a controlled environment, and we didn't end up putting down as far as exactly what they do, but I believe they end up controlling the wholesale level, and they make actually a substantial amount of money by the looks of their website on that. I saw something about $100 million. Now, I don't know if that's in a calendar year or not, and if you would wish, I'd be more than happy to continue researching our neighboring states and how they match or do not match what our state is doing at this particular time. There's also a column as far as for farm license or farm wineries and what does their license allow for, brew pubs. Can brewers, manufacturers, or wholesalers also be retailers? So I provide that as a resource. Again, if there's any more as far as research that your committee would like to have done, we would be more than willing to either take that now or have it sent to us and provide that to you as soon as that research is conducted.
Mr. Chair.
Yep. Hold on one second. I've got a number of folks with some questions, so I would add perhaps. So I've got Gazelka, Bonoff, Reinert, Pappas, and then myself. So we've got a series of questions. Great presentation. You stirred a lot of interest up, so that's good. Senator Gazelka, why don't you start us off?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that you let me go in front of you. That's admirable of you. But I have a question related to the enforcement. Do you have a rough breakdown of where enforcement issues come up? I mean, I can see some of the retail ones, but do you have particular areas that are problem areas and some that you have listed here, but maybe they're not very problematic?
You mean as far as which
like
category?
Tampering or, you had one listed, for example, product tampering. Do we see much of that as an enforcement issue? I'm just wondering where your enforcement issues lie.
Mike, are you?
As far as number of cases.
A large portion of our enforcement issues would be related to the tax delinquency liquor posting, where a retailer is posted on that no ship list and they continue to buy at retail for resale in their establishment. We monitor the distributors to ensure that they're not violating the law by selling, and then we would visit retail account to check their inventory to see where their product is coming from and whether it's coming from a legal source or not. It's a misdemeanor in Minnesota to purchase for resale. Like if I own a bar and I purchase alcohol from another liquor store for resale in my bar, it's a misdemeanor. But if I cross the bridge into Wisconsin and transport that product across the state line for resale, it's a felony. So we look for those types of things. Otherwise, I think we do trade issues. Didn't have all the information in front of me, so I'm shooting from the hip here. But the pre-license inspections take a lot of our time, mainly with the supplier tier, wholesale, importer, manufacturer, because those are areas that local communities don't look at all.
Just Senator Gazelka, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just follow up. Just if you have anything that has maybe the numbers, it'd be nice to see where they break out.
We do have that.
Yeah. Okay, and Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Arnold, you talked about Iowa making a significant amount of money from their relationship to the wholesalers. Can you say more about that? I don't understand how they operate. What is the state's role exactly? Is there a three-tier system? And then the last question that I have is, could you comment on our neighboring states with regard to Sunday sales?
Mr. Chairman, Senators, I'll go with Sunday sales to begin with because I will end up having to answer the fact that I did not research that question, but I would be more than happy to.
Thank you.
And we will supply that information as soon as possible.
And the first one was?
Tell us more about what you mean with regard to how Iowa operates.
When I was doing my presentation, I talked about the two different models of the three-tier system. In some states, they end up controlling one of those areas. I believe Iowa controls the wholesale.
Mr. Chairman, what do you mean by controls?
I'm just trying to get there. Some states end up basically they end up with what's called controlling as far as retail, which means it's the actual state that owns the retail locations. They can end up also owning basically or running the wholesale location, which means that all product that then at that point that would be brought into the state for retail would have to go through the state's warehouse. Now, I would be more than, again, happy to go through and kind of do a line by line of what Iowa is doing. But I believe they have a control level at the wholesale level.
So, Mr. Chair and Mr. Alt, is there a distributor in that scenario at all? Is there still a distribution model, or is it just direct then wholesale to retail?
Mr. Chairman and Senators, I've seen it in both ways. And I would have to go back and see exactly as far as what Iowa is doing. But some states have controlled the wholesale level, which means there would not be a wholesale or distributor as far as a private enterprise.
Okay.
The state would actually be the wholesaler or distributor in that model.
Great. Senator Reinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I just want to note, I didn't bring Sunday sales up.
Duly noted.
My question is, can you come back and just talk a little bit about where municipal liquor stores fit into the competitive three-tier structure that we have in Minnesota?
Mr. Chair and Senators, the aspect as far as municipal liquor stores are obviously allowed. It would be that obviously would again be an area where it's controlled not by the state, which is the models that I was talking about, but actually that level, that retail location, would actually then be owned by the city. Mike, do you have anything more to add?
Well, I was going to say it places the city in the retail tier. The city owns and operates the municipally owned liquor store. Most of them are package stores. Some mm-hmm. are still in the on sale as well, but there's a great deal of liability in the on sale serving of alcohol as related to the off-sale package store, but it would be the retail tier.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. So our three-tier essentially allows for municipalities to opt out of sort of the competitive model and make it a controlled, make that retail part of it in their community controlled.
They do allow for a local option election for split liquor to allow the city to issue private licenses for on-sale bars, restaurants for on-premise sales, but you're correct with regard to the off-sale.
Thank you.
Senator Pappas, you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Some of my questions have been answered because you're talking about ownership, because control could include regulation, too. So I was confused about that word control.
Mr. Chair and Senators, yeah, we would be more talking about ownership as far as a controlled three-tier.
Yeah.
All states basically regulate, so the competitive model actually is just a matter of regulating the industry but allowing private enterprise to participate in all three tiers, which is what Minnesota again does.
Mr. Chairman, just another question. Thank you. Senator Bonner, you brought up the whole issue of Sunday sales. It's interesting because I taught a class last fall on public policy analysis, and one of my students decided to take on the issue of Sunday sales. And he's a police officer, but he thought, why don't we allow Sunday sales? And so after he researched it, he actually found out that there was data out there that showed that states that have Sunday sales have a higher rate of auto accidents. For whatever reason, people driving and drinking on Sundays. And so he ended up recommending that he came in with the idea it should be eliminated, but he ended up recommending that it not be, and that we continue to not allow Sunday sales.
All right.
Right. Well, we didn't want to discuss any.
We have
any
a bill like that.
Bills that are.
That is correct.
It's a number of things out there, but lots of interesting perspectives on a lot of them. I have a few questions. One is that I understand we have a law that says that one retailer cannot, or one person cannot own more than one liquor store in a municipality. I didn't know that. Where if you you can't own multiple outlets within a single municipality. That's
the off-sale.
It's for off-sale. Is that correct? Yeah. Do you happen to know what the history of that is and why that is at all?
Off the top of my head, no.
You don't. You don't know how long that's been in law?
As long as I've been here, and it's 22 years.
27 years.
Okay. I just didn't know if there was any history of that. Okay. But obviously that doesn't apply to munis because municipals, of course, will have multiple.
Well, it'll be one per that. It's in that municipality. It'll
right.
Be that
but they'll have, but they'll have, they can have multiple outlets
yes.
as well. So, but in a city that has private liquor stores off sale, they could not have one owner own multiple within a city.
Correct.
So, okay. I wanted to ask you about the dram shop insurance. Now, dram shop is an old term, I guess, for bars?
It's an old term for liquor liability.
For liquor liability. Okay. I remember that a couple of years ago there was quite a bit of controversy over some dram shop legislation. I don't remember if that ever came to fruition or not, or if you maybe don't even remember anything about that, or is that an issue that has had any controversy that you recall that we should be aware of as committee members, that some legislation could be proposed from different places or anything, or is that just
at this point,
smooth course, we don't need to... Okay, so you haven't heard anything.
I've
at all.
Heard anything.
Okay, all right. And then other question I had is about tax collections, and that is on now you, as an agency now, you, as far as public safety with your licensing, in your presentation, you take in about $2.5 million in those permits and licenses, but that has nothing to do with alcohol taxes. Is that correct?
You're that talking, would be correct.
Okay,
that's correct,
just your licensing. And you certainly don't need to provide any numbers on this. It's not your, it's of a revenue function. But are the only points now that taxes are collected, it was the excise taxes on wholesalers and then the sales tax from retailers. Do manufacturers pay anything along in that chain of taxes?
They do. I'm not familiar with the,
okay.
Based on their production, they do pay.
So there are some taxes that they pay as well.
Both
okay,
federal and state level.
Catch that mention, okay. And then the excise tax and the sales tax, okay.
Producing here.
Okay. Sir, just for clarification, Mr. Chair and Senators, that would be if they are located here.
If the manufacturer is located here.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Then let me ask you this, as far as the taxes, there was, on the three-tier system, there were two reasons for its existence, one of them being, or that was stated, one of them being the this vertical integration issue and the antitrust issue, and then the other one was for the collection of taxes, that the three-tier system somehow, it allows for the collection of taxes which may have been lost previously. Can you explain that? Because I don't understand how. Why is it easier to collect taxes in a three-tier system as opposed to a non-three-tier?
Mr. Chair and Senators, from the research that I did, basically by having a wholesale tier, whether controlled by the state or whether controlled by private entities, all the liquor that would end up coming into the state would go to that level. At that level is separate from the manufacturer. It's obviously separate then also from retail. That level is responsibility is for the excise taxes. They're not connected. Wouldn't be able to end up maybe hiding 500 barrels out of 3,500 or whatever. Everything that would come in, there would be a tax then obviously on that. Prior to that, apparently there must have been some problems with the proper collection of taxes.
Other questions from the members? Senator Dames.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ault, can you give me some idea how many brew pubs, numbers-wise, and how many microbreweries there are in Minnesota? Do you have any idea?
We have the information, sir, but we don't have it with us. We can get that.
Probably not more than
thank
a dozen.
You.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Senator Pappas.
Just another little announcement is there was an article in the Star Tribune last week about a new brewery opening up in Minneapolis called Harriet Brewing, yeah. And they're going to be located in downtown Minneapolis. So So it is possible to open. It's going to be a small brewery under the limit, I think, of like 10,000 barrels probably. They will be able to sell growlers from their premises. I think they also have a brew pub as well.
Okay.
There's some opportunities for new business growth under the current law.
Okay, other questions from committee members then? Senator Thompson.
Mr. Chairman, I think what you're experiencing here is you're seeing a questioning of kind of the regulatory structure that you maybe haven't seen before, or at least it seems like it, based on the reaction. I know for me a difficult thing is determining what of these regulations promote the public safety and which of them are rent-seeking. Businesses trying to protect themselves from the competition of others. Mm-hmm. And I think you got, you know, liberals and conservatives together here because liberals like, you know, or conservatives like free markets and liberals like free beer. So there we are. That was a joke.
I think we all like free beer.
So seriously, for me, the difficulty is deciding, you know, which of these regulations promote the public safety. Mm-hmm. And which of them are protecting businesses from, you know, I've never tried to order alcohol from out of state, but I've had someone tell me that you can't, if you find a brewer you like in Florida, you can't order a case of beer and have that directly delivered to your house. Is that true? Does it have to go through the wholesaler?
No, that's correct.
Yes. Okay.
You can't. Wine you can, though.
Two cases, correct.
Now, I have a hard time figuring out the economic sense of that, but that's just me.
Well, and I appreciate, gentlemen, you being here because it's not for you to make necessarily make sense of either. As we said earlier, a lot of these decisions get made at the political level, and you certainly are working within that world at the regulatory level and are doing what we ask of you to do. So we do have a number of bills that have been introduced that we will certainly have a robust discussion on about the current system, the regulatory framework we have, and the pros and cons of that. So we'll certainly have these days for those lengthier debates. So with that, if there's no other questions for the committee, then I'll just make a quick announcement that you probably know we're not going to be meeting tomorrow. It's the state of the state, and it's going to overlap a little bit with our time. So we will not have a committee meeting tomorrow. Next week, we will be having some bills on the calendar. So starting then, I don't think we have any more overviews scheduled. So review time is over. See, Senator Resta, you've been through these for many years. But I have been told by several members on the committee that these have been enormously helpful because they're having to make decisions in a vacuum without really knowing.
I agree, Mr. Chairman. I'm just glad they're done.
Right. So that's all we have scheduled on the overviews. And then we will be getting into those bills. So appreciate your members' patience and learning all of these issues this past month. And we'll dig in then. So we'll see you then next week. This committee is adjourned.